I think, how did they do that? I think, why did they do that? And it ticks me off that people forget about it. I asked my dad a lot of questions before he died. I went in the Air Force, I became a pilot myself. I fly for Delta now. When I fly over to London, I look down on the countryside, I think about Messerschmitts rolling in with my perfectly safe airliner. But these guys got up and he did it again, and again, and again. And he didn't quit. I don't know if I can do that. I think about that, and I go, you think about why all these guys joined. They're farm boys, they're probably bored out of their mind, they've been through prohibition, they're all poor. And they join for the romance of flying. They want to be pilots, they want to go do these amazing toys Uncle Sam has, they want to go fight the Hun, whatever it is. But they join out of a sense of patriotism and adventure. They get into this, and it's not what they thought it was going to be, but now they're with a family. They have a family back home, but they have a family that they're with, and they're not going to let that guy down that's next to them. And that's why they kept on doing it. So they joined out of patriotism, but if you think about it, why they kept on doing this day in and day out, they stayed there out of love for their fellow crew member that was with them. And I'm sure my family's fairly typical, that I have some family that I get along with and that I see eye to eye with, and I have other family that I don't. My dad is the kind of guy that was humble, didn't talk much about this unless you asked him. And to me, he represents the best part of my family. And the other side of my family would just assume they don't give a damn about this. So I think what these men did has to be remembered. And throughout history, the memory of a parent only lasts one generation, maybe two generations to his grandkids. And then you're dust and it's as if you never existed. We have the capability to make sure that doesn't happen now. I hate to say with the internet, You can put something on the internet and it will possibly last a very, very long time. And you talked about an exit strategy. I have a thought on that I'd like to share. And whether you love it or hate it, to me, Facebook has proven to me that if you have a critical mass of interest in a subject, it can perpetuate, grow, and keep on growing after its initial input.
Wally, let me interrupt you. You've been one of the eloquent statements I've heard, and I thank you for that. I would like to delay the discussion of Facebook or other things.
I'm not saying Facebook, but okay. I think...
We'll talk about those in a minute, but we have a few more people we want to have introduced.
But I think that's probably the exit strategy you're looking for in long terms. But what these guys did, honest to God, if somebody doesn't do something, it's going to go the way of the dodo bird. The knowledge of what they did.
We've been doing a lot, and I'm expecting you now to be a future helper in this endeavor. So can we move on to the next one and get on around? Yeah.
Well, I get really emotional. All of the above. I just want to know more and learn.
Okay, thank you.
I came because she asked me if I wanted to come. And I thought it sounded really interesting, but also because my knowledge of what my dad did is sketchy. I know he flew 25 missions. I knew he was the pilot. I knew he crash-landed. I knew he was in prison camp, that I was born while he was in prison camp. And I knew he finally came home, but that was it. So I just wanted to hear more of the details about what it's like and the things that happened.
Good, thank you. That's tough.
Cool. I'm Donna Dillard. I'm Vernon's sister-in-law. And our motivation was to get him to some of the meetings.
I'm Teresa Hendricks. I'm Vernon. My uncle is Vernon Dillard, and he can't make it with us anymore. He's still alive, but he just can't make it to me. He has Alzheimer's so bad. So for me, the first one when I came was 10 years ago when we had it here. First one was, all right, I'm going on vacation. But I met so many people that first year, and then I kept on coming. And every year I came, I made friends. And even the veterans, I've made friends and talked to them. And I feel like if I don't come anymore, part of me's missing.
Okay.
My name is Charles Hammond. My stepfather was Clyde Mills. He was a mechanic on the Bell of the Blue out of the 423rd Squadron. And in 2003, it was the first time that we went to the reunion because my mom had passed away. And it's a lot. I have learned a lot from, you know, the other veterans and stuff like that. And we got to know a core group of veterans that were stationed with my stepfather, and there's been quite a few of them that have passed on. My father was killed on April 15, 1945 in Germany, just before the war was over with. I'm a Vietnam era veteran, and I'd like to continue learning more about it. And as I'm learning more about World War II, I'm starting to get more facts about my own father, because all the records that they had in Washington, D.C. have been destroyed. And when I talk to family members, they're, oh, we don't know this, we don't know that, but I have a son who's a pain in the, you know what, and he's on a computer to all the families in Texas, and he's getting all kinds of information. So I'm building up more about my dad, and my stepfather doesn't talk much about it. You know, he throws me a picture every once in a while and gives me a little information. So, you know, it's a learning process.
And I'm Donna Hammond, Charlie's wife. And we have met people and we enjoy seeing them. And we've come every year but one since 2003.
I'm Carol Sewell. And my father is Ken Wade, who's here at the reunion, and he's a B-17 bomber. It's because of the echo that I'm here. My dad fell in 2008, broke a hip. It had to be redone. And as I was paying his bills and taking care of all of his mail, I came across the echoes. I said, Dad, have you ever gone to a reunion? He said, no. I said, why not? He said, well, I was busy. I had a career. I was raising a family. And, you know, he kept up with a few crew members that were still alive. But I think he's the last one of his crew, I think. But anyway, to keep his spirits up and everything, I said, well, look, there's going to be one in Fort Worth. And my dad lives in Houston, and my husband and I live outside of San Antonio. And I said, why don't we go? And we went, and we enjoyed it. My dad really enjoyed talking to other people. He really didn't talk, as all you know, they didn't talk about their war experiences hardly at all. What I knew was sort of sketchy. And I enjoyed it. We enjoyed the people. And it's the first time I think I've really talked to any other World War II veterans extensively, besides my dad. And even this time, I met someone who spent 2 years in a German POW camp. I never met anybody that was in a POW camp. And so I come because of my dad, but I also come because I appreciate the generation, and I appreciate the veterans. I don't know I would come if it was, you know, 20,000 members of the 8th Air Force, or however many people served in the 8th Air Force. It's continuing, isn't it? It's still in existence? Yeah. But I love the size of this, and I love being able to talk with individual veterans and watch my dad interact with them. But I'm very grateful for the Echoes, because I wouldn't have known about y'all, because my dad never mentioned it, without the Echo.
Okay.
I am Steve Sewell. I am Carol's husband, and I knew nothing about this group until she found out about it. I grew up with some close friends of my family and myself who had been one B-17 pilot, a B-24 pilots. I'm listening to our stories. A good friend of my parents flew 56 missions in the B-17 out of England, and shot down 3 times, crash landed 3 times, and the crew all survived the war. Quite interesting.
Very short experience.
I have no idea what unit he was in. He's been happy. I've done a lot of reading about World War II and various. I was a military pilot myself, served in the Marine Corps in Vietnam a couple of years. And I also go to 2 different Marine Corps aviation reunion groups. And so I was very pleased to start coming to these with Carol when we went to Fort Worth and met some very interesting gentlemen, and I have the utmost respect for everything that they did, as we all do. And I had a couple thoughts about the exit strategy, because I'm in 2 groups, nowhere near as big as the 8th Air Force Group. One is just the squadron that I went into Vietnam the first time with. Then there's another one with all Marine A4 pilots of all time. And we're all kind of getting a little bit gray-haired, we're discussing the same things. But I really enjoy coming.
Okay, we'll get to you in just a moment then. I think we've got one more left here.
Yeah, I'm Greg Armbrust. My dad's Norman, and I'm here with him. And I think he told me today he's been to every one but one reunion.
Wow.
And that year he went to the 8th Air Force reunion, and he could only go to one, he thought. So that's why he missed that one. But I'd like to get more involved if you're looking
Absolutely.
For volunteers. I was in the Air Force myself and stationed over in the headquarters over in Germany, and my parents came over to visit. My dad was a POW, so we drove the countryside where he was a POW trying to find the camp where he was at. Of course, they'd all torn all those down. And then he wanted to go to Thurlow. This was in the 70s. And I made some calls. I had some contacts with the Ministry of Defense, and they said, "Greg, you can't get in there. It's a top secret installation." So it was at that time. It's not anymore. And so I told him we can't do it. So we went to London anyway, and we checked into our hotel, and the receptionist there said, "Wait, what are you doing here?" "Well, we're kind of just visiting. My dad was a World War II vet." She goes, "Oh, yeah." And then we got into the story about how I wanted to take him to Thurlow and couldn't. She goes, "Well, I have this Air Vice Marshal that's a friend. Let me give him a call." And that's a 3-star general. Next thing I know, we're up at Thurlow. We're in the truck going down the runway. This guy turns around and looks at my dad and says, "Who the heck do you know?" The receptionist at the hotel.
It was meant to be. My dad tried to find it when he and my mother traveled and could not find Thurlow back in the 70s or 80s.
Yeah, it was a top secret installation.
Now I know why.
Yeah. Okay, this has been just very inspiring, folks, to hear your comments, and a couple of you are very eloquent in that. I'm going to, I have one question I didn't ask, and now I think I am. And you don't have to answer it, but I'm going to ask it.
Thank God. I don't think I could.
Yeah, okay. Are you willing to stand up in the business meeting and say your view counts and express your view? You don't have to answer that, but I'm hoping the answer is yes. I mentioned earlier is who makes, part of what we need to do is know who's going to make decisions. What I'm hearing here is a whole lot of people who have an extraordinary respect for our World War II veterans and their of all types, particularly our own. And I respect for history and just the love of people. And my personal view is that we should continue to help with this organization as long as there's people willing to show up. That's my view. And what I alluded to earlier is some people had different views. But the reality is this second generation has been supporting the organization and been the backbone of it for the last several years. And I would like to see it go on to continue supporting these wonderful people that many of you have been talking about. And so now I'd like to just open it up, and I'll start with you because Marty, isn't it?
Yes.
Because you had a comment, and I'll come back to Steve, who also said he has something particularly wanted to say.
Well, people are opinionated one way or the other about Facebook, you know, and they like it, they love it, they hate it, whatever. But if you want to search and find somebody, whether it's an old girlfriend, a boss that you had, or whatever, you go to Facebook. It seems to be the place to go. And people log on and they get their web page going. And I think that, for me, and please speak up if you disagree, but I think the way to get, we have a certain number of people that attend the reunion we're interested in. But everybody, for the most part, is gonna wanna know, you know, what did my dad do? Was, you know, and they're gonna get curious at some point, or what did my grandfather do, in World War II? So you can put his name on it in the internet and hopefully make this a personal connection. That's where you're going to meet, or the rubber's going to meet the road. And I think if you can break this down into the 306 bomb group or the squadron and have a roster and people can log in and look at what their dad did in the unit, you're going to start to see information come from outside into our webpage and into the Facebook arena or whatever vehicle, whatever internet interface you want to have. But right now we're in the meeting room, we're in this room, we're trying to reach out. But I think the internet is the way to have people bring us information about what their father did, this piece of memorabilia, they can take a snapshot of it. And that's the way to reverse the information flow.
Okay. There are some maintenance requirements there.
I imagine there's legal requirements.
But it's
disclaimers.
Okay, very good. Right, very good. All I'm saying is, for a lot of the ideas that are going to be brought out, just keep in mind that somebody's got to do it. And some of us are willing. And if we have enough of us who are willing, we can do almost any of these things. But let me come back to Steve. You said you had a couple of things you wanted to mention.
Well, I didn't have, until it was mentioned earlier, I really didn't have any thought about anything about an exit strategy, just something that has been discussed in the smallest of the two groups that I go to. It's down to like 8 or 10 or 12 people. There's only ones left coming to our reunions every other year now. And so that's why we've been discussing, are we going to do this again? Are we going to do it like the Doolittle Raiders and the last guy turns the cup over or whatever that thing is they do up here? And I don't really have any solution for this group because the ones that I'm dealing with are actually just minuscule compared to even the 306 as the number of people were involved.
Let me emphasize, I'm not proposing or saying I want to exit. I think I just explained that. But that is a view of some of the veterans and people. So I think, I also suspect that some of them are just tired. They said, you know, they don't want to have to do anything anymore. And some of them are may have other reasons. I'm not proposing that, but if we're going to dominate the view that we should keep on going, then people have to stand up and say that we think it's worthwhile in doing it. Yeah.
One other comment. I put there's a board about Luftstalag 1. My dad was a POW, and I put a request in for information back in like 2005. About 6 months ago, a guy who's my dad's roommate in the POW camp contacted me through what's basically a 6-year-old web post.
Yeah.
And here this 90-something-year-old guy gets on the internet, he starts doing research, he sees my name, links it in his head with my dad's name, and he calls me. And that's keeping, I mean, that type of information flow would perpetually be, to me, a, you know, self-perpetuating vehicle. Because the vets are going to get old, they're going to die.
Right.
You know, and you can't.
Actuary is actuary, that's right. Yeah. Sharon, did you have?
Well, yeah, I have a question only because I'm not that familiar with the association, but all right, is there a set of bylaws or a document that?
Yes.
And are these kinds of things addressed in there, like who can vote?
No.
How you dissolve these?
No, it's a strange, strange, okay. Strange document. And just to give you the fundamental issue, it does not define membership. Let me repeat that. It does not define membership.
I think they did that purposely because right. They were not, there's no dues, it's all voluntary donations
right.
That we could receive, and that way it's keeping it open.
Right. And there was no, although it says the membership will elect the officers, it never defined membership and never defined who can vote. Which is why I mentioned earlier that the board last year, we made a motion to finally say who can vote. If the bylaws don't say it, then the board's going to say it. So that, and there are other strange things. We don't have time to go into them all, but that's the basic thing. And the only other thing it says is if you do dissolve, you have to give the money to some other worthwhile cause. But you know, we don't, our money
it
is,
doesn't say
right,
that.
Right. It doesn't go really in much more than that. Yes, you had it.
It seems to me like when you talk about exit strategy, we really have two separate things happening here. We have an organization of men who fought that war, and this is their organization. And whatever they choose to do, we should respect. And we may not even like what they choose to do. But this is, we're here for them, they're not here for us. They've already done it.
That you're absolutely right, but let me point out, as I did earlier, there are over 500 vets who aren't here, who aren't here to vote.
Well,
so
my second point is, from everything we've been saying here, from what I've heard, our mission is to remember, first of all, our families individually. But I think we also have, what I'm hearing is an educational mission. You know, we don't want this to be forgotten.
That is actually part of the bylaw mission.
Yeah, that's something the second generation, the third generation, we have to take that upon ourselves. And so we really have two separate tracks going here. We have a mission, and they have completed their mission. And I'm sort of fervent about American history, and I believe that if we can band together in a small group, even like this, and step up each one of us and do a minimum amount of work, we can maintain ourselves as an educational forum for people.
That
it doesn't have to be elaborate, but we can put what we know out there and solicit from other people that they know.
Well, that is, in fact, one of the items mentioned in the bylaws, is for camaraderie, meeting and reunions, and there's also to maintain the history. So that's why it's the 306th Bomb Group Historical Association. So there certainly is a basis in the existing bylaws for continuing. If you had zero World War II vets, just in terms of the that goal. But I just bring it up because it is these vets, but we have 24 vets here. We have over 500 who aren't here. And so.
We still have 500 living vets in the 306?
Over 500.
Oh, but are they members of the
in the 306?
There are no members.
Just these three. In our directory right now,
right.
You will find over 560 vets.
So that's the 367. The 367, 368, 369, and 423 squadron.
But to Sharon's point, people on this list are people who have come to a reunion, or are the wives that we, you know, that maybe did or maybe didn't come to the reunion, friends and other people who come to the reunion. That's how they got on the list.
Well, not all of them have ever been to a reunion.
One, I found the widow last year. She lives not that far from here. She and her husband had never known the organization got started because none of their buddies in the 306 ever got in touch with him, found him. He was a minister and he was transferred all around. And she said he died not knowing it existed, but she was interested.
I think how much issue there is for these men around the country. There are probably thousands of us, you know, who are related in some way to these men. Facebook is a great way because, you know, it's kind of hard for guys my age, but I still use the internet. And yeah, I think it would be a useful tool if I used it.
I was.
And then refer, okay. You have information on to refer,
yeah.
You know, 306 and ways to contact.
There's also Luftwaffe organizations that are going at this from the other side, figuratively speaking.
Right.
But I read on the internet a couple of years back, they were, like my dad was shot down on the 12th of September, and there were people dissecting what Luftwaffe pilot attacked this airplane and shot it down, who were the members of the crew, where they were buried, and all this stuff just gets linked around. There's links to VA websites. You can find where your father's crew is buried, what grave site over in the cemeteries in Belgium and Louisville, Kentucky, all that stuff, it's all over there.
Okay, I want to try to wrap things up. I don't think we actually specified a time, and I'm willing to stay here longer, but most people probably expected 1 hour. I would like to know if any of you are willing to consider being on the board. Not, may or may not be this time, but I'd really like to know. You can come up afterwards if you prefer and tell me or ask questions or whether you might be willing to do that. I'd like to have somebody has a burning something they've been wanting to say and hadn't had a chance to say it. I want to give that person maybe a new topic or anything, that person something to say. But does anybody have something, some issue, some whatever that you'd like to say? Vernon's back here, by the way, is Dr. Williams. I think all of you know who he is. And he's the historian, and he certainly will agree with your comments, Steve, and others around here. And if you have memorabilia, or know of it, or can control it out of your relative who might be still living, talk to him so we can get it in the digital archives. And I think that's all.
Also our editor of the Echoes.
He edits our Echoes, and he arranges for he's been handling the convention arrangements. So
as soon as you leave, I'm going to sweep out.
Right. But I can tell you that as wonderful as this man is, and he doesn't look like he's overstretched, but he is.
Yeah.
And so he's been doing this, but we need for us to, collectively to pick up some of the slack so that, because he has a full-time job as well, pick up some of the slack. He's been doing this gratis. We would not be where we are today without him. But he is a historian, he loves history, and he loves this generation, has personal relationship to it as well. So I thank you for coming. I'm willing to meet again with anybody. And what I'm planning on doing is sending out something to the list, if we have your address, which we should, email preferably, snail mail if required, and kind of summarize what we our meeting today. And ask you if you are willing to help, either as I can do something in the next reunion, or I'm willing to consider being on the board, or I'm willing to consider doing any other thing. And you all have been very eloquent. I thank you. It's inspired me to work a little harder. Susan.
I have one burning issue related to veterans. I do interviews for the Nimitz Museum in Fredericksburg, Texas, which is now the National Museum of the Pacific War. And we are always looking for World War II veterans to put on a list to interview. And it can be in person, you know, if they're near somebody, or it can be by telephone. So if any of you know a non-306 veteran neighbor or whatever, and would like to ask them if they'd like to be interviewed, you can contact me and I can get them on the list so they can become part of the archives of the museum.
Is that just for the Pacific Theater that they do that, or?
Our veterans are leaving us so quickly. We're doing veterans in any theater, European theater, home front, so.
Yes.
What is, what happens to the interviews that are being done? Are they videoed at all?
Vernon can probably best answer.
The ones that I do are part of the East Anglia Air War Guard, my project.
Are they videoed?
And they're videoed, and they're deposited in the East Anglia project. And I've been doing that for 10 years. And so there's about 600 or 700 interviews from across. Now, this is a different one, and those are deposited in the Nimitz library. I know the World War II Museum near New Orleans, they're also doing it, and there's a number of others as well.
Well, the people that are in our group that you have they been interviewed?
Some have, and some haven't.
Well, we can't make them if they, you know.
No, but I mean, if they would be willing.
Yes.
Well, I've interviewed some this weekend in this hotel.
Well, I'm wondering about people that are around the country, if they're in your area, and if you had, I mean, if you were willing to seek out those folks, if they were willing to be interviewed, that maybe as a group, that would be something that everyone else would find valuable, and it could be used in our, reunions, and that people will be able to connect that way, as there are fewer and fewer vets.
Right.
And is that?
Well, I know Vernon has interviewed some people at their homes and other places, not U.S. and around the world for that matter. So that's certainly possible. So if you can recruit someone you know that say, "Hey, have you ever been interviewed? Would you be willing to do so?" and contact Vernon or Barbara, and we can start the ball rolling and see if we can get that accomplished.
Is there any readily available online training for how to conduct oral history interviews?
Well, my uncle's bond group's the 381st out of Ridgewell, and I don't do much for that bond group because they don't need me, and I put most of the efforts here. But one of the things we try to do is set up a second generation sort of interviewing core. And I set up a elaborate training website showing them how to set up the stage, what kind of equipment. You've got choice number 1, 2, 3, 4 for audios, for mics, and all of that. We didn't get a single person to do that. And so it's been only me. But I have that site that we can revitalize a little bit. But it's set up to where someone from New York or upstate New York could decide, okay, I'm going to do oral history for the 306, and I get on the site and go through the little training and the tutorials, and decide what equipment I'm going to need. The thing that's changed since I did the website is that equipment is a lot cheaper and smaller and easier and more simplistic. Most of the time, you're going to have something in your home, a video camera, for example, that would produce a better quality video feed than my $1,200 camera that I had back when I did that website. And so, and it cost $200. If this group would like to do that, it would not take much for me to revitalize that. And so that you can use me as a resource to say, I'm having trouble doing this, and I shot this interview, and I, but all the training, the tutorials, how to do oral history interviews, legal releases, everything was on that. It's a sort of a turnkey thing. I tell my, I require the students to pay $5,000 for a 3-hour course and spend a semester doing that. And you wouldn't have to do any of that. You just look at the website.
Okay.
Don't tell our students that. Barbara, I was going to ask you, did you ask about the...
Charles
the
asked anyone, and we weren't clear exactly what you needed to run.
Well, actually, it's in. I need a couple of bodies in the morning for the memorial service, and these are still just invocation
benediction kind of prayer thing, closing prayers. I know that some people are not comfortable doing that, but it's open to anyone. It could be a daughter, a son, it could be a widow, it could be a veteran, it could be anyone. But the idea, what I've tried to do with this is to try to relieve the veterans from having to do anything.
What time? We're going to get volunteers. Tell them what time to be there and what they need to do.
Well, the memorial service starts at 8 o'clock.
Tomorrow morning.
And the dinner is 7 o'clock tomorrow night. That's after the happy hour. We won't say any prayer over the happy hour.
Okay, so is there any other person who feel like they really ought to say something? The group?
I've got a question for Dr. Williams. You were talking about your East Anglia project a few minutes ago, and you've got some interviews that you've done. Is that... Tell us a little bit more about this East Anglia project. I've heard you talk about it in the past, but I never quite understood it.
Yeah, it's the umbrella organization it's the East Anglia Air War Project that's doing everything for you. And the East Anglia Air War Project is me. In other words, it's my project that I developed in the Department of History to do my historical research. It's not ACU, it's not the Department of History of Vernon Williams, and other professors are doing things in Middle Eastern history or whatever, a German modern 20th century history, and they have projects. But my project's designed to do more than just do research. It's a preservation project. And so eventually, when I finish writing the books that are coming out of this, and I go into the rest home, this will eventually be retired to an archive, probably the Mighty Eighth or another major federal facility, where I know that there'll be staff that will care for it for generations to come. I'm not interested in putting it in a local entity that may go broke and that kind of thing. And so, although it does appear like the United States government, they may have to redress and revisit that question.
Yeah, the corporation had more cash on hand than they did.
But the interviews I do with the kids are the same as all the British families that I've interviewed and anyone else in any other bond group. And that is that if they want copies of it for themselves and their families, I can provide those, and I don't charge anything for that. Even Chuck, who did some interviews at Fort Worth, I think I just sent, I had to do some major conversion things, but Kenneth Waite, I sent him a set of several copies so that he could distribute to his family the interview that he did at Fort Worth. And so part of it is the preservation for the archives and all that, but the other part is preservation for the internal family. So the family, maybe grandson would get a hold of one of those discs down the road. And so that's always a very important thing.
Is that on your website? I mean, if we go to your website, can we hear some of the oral interviews?
No, there's a few clips on the current 306 website, but once we get the big collection that belongs to you guys finished, and Savannah, then we're going to start working on taking major clips, so that there'll be hundreds of hours of interview clips. They're too big. Video's too big. Even if you compress it to put 2-hour interviews up. But you can see Ralph Franklin, for example, talking about when he was a little boy. And those are just sort of samples that we did to see how much space it would take and how difficult and how well they worked in terms of people who had slower internet.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt the professor who can talk forever. I love him to death, but he can. And say, you know, that the meeting is adjourned. You're welcome to sit around longer if you like, but for officially, the meeting's over.
We have happy hour prices at the bar. The cash
That was one of the most eloquent things I've heard in a long time. I thank you for sharing that with us. I'm a tech guy. I like your idea. We'll have to.